You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, everyone. I am Martin Acuña, and you're listening to Backstage Talk. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Backstage Talk. Today's guest is Philip David Stern. He has composed original music, scores, and orchestrations for live theater, film, television, concerts, and dance. He is also the founder of New York Stage Originals, a company dedicated to creating new stage theatricals. His latest work is Stonecrossed. This musical tells the story of two young lovers whose lives are changed forever when they inadvertently cross the divide. Falling instantly in love, Stony and Jewel discover that they are more the same than they are different, despite what they have been taught to believe, and start to question what has been painted in stone. Will these stone-crossed lovers choose a shorter life together over a longer life apart? We only have to see it on stage to know. The 2021 studio concept album features Broadway favorites such as Antonio Cipriano, Christina Lobato, Alex Boniello, Celia Rose Gooding, and Telly Leung, among other amazing artists. Philip, it is an honor to have you over. Welcome to Backstage Talk.
Great. Thank you for having me. So great to be here.
First, Philip, I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself, about your background, how you ended up in theater, and yes, basically who you are and all your work, because you have a lot under your belt.
Yeah, I have a very sort of eclectic, diverse background, and that was purely by chance. I started in Canada. I'm Canadian and American, but I started in Canada as really studying as a youngster classical composition at the Royal Conservatory in Toronto, and under Samuel Dolan, who's a Canadian. He was a serial 12-tone composer, and I kind of fell into pop sort of on the side with bands, as all kids do, and
as we all do at some point.
That's right, everyone has been in a band, and so I was in a band and I was writing songs, or what I thought were songs, and that's another subject, right? What is a song? At 20 years old, I wrote a song for Toronto called Toronto's You and Me. And that was, and it won a Toronto Song Contest. And that was kind of my first song that was out there. And so I was kind of straddling songwriting and classical composition, because at the same time, I started writing small little symphonic things.
Okay.
So that's kind of my Canadian sort of side was that. And I started writing later on for film and TV. I'm not one of those people who says, oh, yeah, I was, you know, taken to Broadway shows and as a kid. And that's how I learned it. And that's how I actually never really thought too much about musical theater as growing up. And I knew about it. I went to, like, Funny Thing Happens on the Way to the Forum. I love Guys and Dolls. I joined a cabaret and sang in a cabaret, but it was kind of peripheral. My musical theater background, it was kind of not something I was seeking. And so when we moved to New York, I thought about studying jazz. So I did the BMI Jazz Composers Workshop and still was not really in musical theater. I was still kind of, I did some film and TV work and such. But my first musical that I did was a version of A Christmas Carol called Scrooge. And we did that. That was a 40-minute one-act thing that I later expanded into two acts to be a full kind of concert, almost oratorio musical theater, a very weird hybrid. And I say it's kind of a weird hybrid because I didn't really come into the tradition as a lot of musical theater composers do at all. I didn't really, when I wrote Scrooge, the producer at first, we thought that it was supposed to be a ballet. Mm-hmm. So I had all these like motifs and I was like sort of developing it like motivically, not thinking, yeah. Oh, song. So then when the producer said, no, this should be a musical, I said, what? Okay. So I went back and I used some of those motifs. So it kind of is this very strange hybrid, this first musical I wrote, of being more of an orchestral recapitulation of motivic elements. And so over the years with Scrooge, because it kind of found a little bit of an audience and we started touring it, mm-hmm. I started, oh, okay, musical theater should have actual songs. Like where, so I actually started developing it into more, with more spots where there was actual, you know, moments, emotionally heightened moments that needed song. So it does have two or three actual songs in mm-hmm. it, but most of all Scrooge is a very unusual and I don't think I could write it again if I tried, and I think that's kind of cool because people get all these ideas of what a musical is supposed to be, and I had no idea what a musical is supposed to be and so I think I could never write in that way again because it's kind of being, you know, okay, you got to have a want song and you got to have this and this is what makes a musical. So I think it was really interesting for me that I didn't come into that tradition. That may be a really bad thing because, you know, I think it can make the struggle harder, you know, when you're trying to write a musical when you haven't really studied the form. Mm-hmm. So I came to it in that way through jazz music, through classical music, and writing sort of from the outside of the industry. I wasn't really inside with, you know, with folks who I could, you know, call on to say, you know, how do I approach this? So I was kind of coming at it from this filmic motivic thing. So over the years, like we started this company, my wife Lisa and I, Lisa Hopkins, and we started this company called New York Stage Originals, and we started touring Scrooge, and then we created a tap dance show called Tap Kids. And I started developing other stuff that could be toured. I created Midsummer Night's Dream called Dream. And slowly I kind of was kind of, because we were living in New York, you know, kind of seeing more shows mm-hmm. and getting more used to the form, and sort of developing more what is kind of what I would say is more expected, I guess, or not expected, but
like
more
a more traditional sound for musical theater.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that saying that with a grain of salt, because like we all know that can be many things.
Yeah.
Like, and so, but with the construct of, you know, more thinking in terms of the actual structure, mm-hmm. being able to, you know, think about points in musically where, you know, a song is warranted or, so anyway, I'm trying to lead up to Stonecross here, how that happened. I wrote a show called Young Dr. Jekyll. Actually, Dream. Let's go back to Dream because I started doing the workshop here up in Vermont and went great. And with students, high school students mm-hmm. and college students. And then we said, oh, let's do another workshop. Let's do our Young Dr. Jekyll. And so I had to show Young Dr. Jekyll. And I found it like, oh, we have to write a whole big group number now because we have this whole group of kids who needs new material. So started kind of changing the piece a bit to fit like this group of kids. So they'd have stuff to do and stuff to dig their teeth into. And so after that production, I thought to myself, wow, it's really challenging to find material that's diverse, has a message, and can have like enough interesting characters to kind of keep everyone's interest and involvement in the show as actors, so they can, mm-hmm. so they have a lot of material. So I started, after that Young Dr. Jekyll experience, I started, well, I should create something that is colorful, is has a message, a universal message, can be cast with a universal cast. And then I started thinking, well, I should put it, you know, back somewhere with an open palette, in a time frame that's, you know, we don't really know much about, mm-hmm. that's very simple. So I thought of the, you know, the back in the Stone Ages would be a great
time and space for this open palette.
Exactly. For this, a world that seems in our minds sort of simple, mm-hmm. But yet I wanted to create a space where the environment, the earth, was a part of the story, and where the earth could be a metaphor for stuff going on today. So the earth, the story has this fault line which divides the two sides, and that's kind of like the West Side Story kind of thing, mm-hmm. Romeo and Juliet. And the earth kind of speaks in the show. There are rumbles, and there's also a glacier that's melting. It gets upset. They all think it gets upset. And so I wanted to sort of create an atmospheric metaphor for as a character, and I felt like, you know, if you can put it in a rocky landscape where weather, it's hot in the day, it's cold at night, mm-hmm. and extreme temperatures, and they're all struggling to survive, to find food. And so that's kind of was the sort of place. And then the Romeo and Juliet structure felt so natural, mm-hmm. for the show, yeah. to have, you know, Stony and Jewel, and they're all, the characters are named after rocks, like basalt and feldspar. I guess in hindsight, I could have delved deeper into the character names. I was trying to kind of create sort of character metaphors for their, you know, for their names, for their, like, what a, you know, what type of stone is basalt, what type of stone is feldspar. Pumice is another, you know, character, side, mm-hmm. character. So they're all named after rocks, and we have a quartet of lovers. The two, Stony wanders across the fault line and meets Jewel, but he is not supposed to go across the fault line. So the whole thematic element is about asking questions. So when they meet each other, they question why they can't kiss. They start to question, and they take a chance, because they've been told they'll get a disease if they die. And the disease thing was actually pre-COVID. I had, you know, no idea that would, you know, there would be this pandemic going on. So that's either a good or bad thing. I don't know.
But it just fits into the musical.
I know. So yeah. So. Do you want me to continue talking about that? That's kind of this sort of storyline, thematic stuff, or do you have specific?
I actually want to go a little bit back into the creative process of where did you actually like start? Did you start with music, or did you start with the book? Or because you just said that you started thinking about this time and space in which it could fit any cast. And it, yes. could be performed by any performer. So that is my question, yeah. on the creative process.
Yeah. So I started actually, and I'm trying to think back, this is 2018, I think I started looking at, how Romeo and Juliet would be in the Stone Ages. And so I started just plotting. I really actually started plotting out the book first, which is kind of unusual for me because I'm sort of one to like go on the keyboard and like slam out, oh, cool melodies and, you know, and sort of start in the wrong spot. So I actually tried to tell, to sort of discipline myself.
Yeah, like being a musician, like the normal thought process would be music first, story later.
Yeah.
So for this, for Stone Cross, the challenge was the other way around. You started by the story and then started playing music.
Yeah, I started with the story and I started sort of thinking of the characters and who they were and what this world was like and what, you know, and then I started thinking about that they have these human traits that we like, you know, like we hear about how Europeans came to North America and they wiped out all the buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be this pattern of causing extinction. So I thought, going back in time, in my head, they got rid of the woolly mammoth. And so they were hunting mice. All that was left are mice. So in fact, the show used to begin with a song called, it was just mice. And they were mice. So bad. Okay. So anyway, so as you'll hear, the beginning changed a lot. It was, the beginning used to be more about the struggle for survival. And that's how they crossed the fault line because they were hunting and hunting each other's territory. Though Stoney, the main character, ends up being a vegan. He's a herbivore. Yeah. And his father is like, how did this ever happen, my son? He's a herbivore. John Rua sings that song, A Father's Job. He's trying to teach him how to hunt. So, yeah, so my creative process began with the book. And then in the summer of 2019, I really started just sketching motivically. And I actually tried not to write songs per se. And I guess I was going back to my old sort of ideas of like motivic development. So I had this opening theme idea, this kind of world sort of on the verge of like something like lava and steam and stuff. And I started developing motivic themes, and those slowly morphed into songs. Like Stoney's I Want song is really the same as Tony's in West Side Story. Something's out there.
Mm-hmm.
So he sings in the second piece, he sings Just Out of Reach, where everything, he doesn't know what's there in front of him. It's all out of reach. I can see it. I can, you know, but it just slips away. And that harkens back to this being a coming of age story, coming of age Stone Age story. Really, that's what this musical, another thematic element I kept thinking about was this coming of age in Stone Age. So I started writing that, and similarly plotting his best buddy Tuff, who has a condition. He doesn't sweat. He is a panter, so he had never known what it's like to sweat, but he drools everywhere.
And that's where you inserted the leitmotif of da da dee da da is really kind of cool. I think it's like the third or fourth song, and I loved it.
Oh, great! Yeah, and that's really where as a writer, I started wondering about tone and how far one can go, because the show does get really serious mm-hmm. in the second act.
Yeah.
Stoney has this whole like operatic, mm-hmm. pop operatic thing at the end where he's mourning Jewel. That's interesting. So it's interesting tone wise, I think, And I'm always learning, and I feel like it's all that shaping, like sculpting, knowing how, if the sculpture works, like when you're adding something that becomes kind of lighter and sillier. And do you know what I mean? Like, I started to wonder, that's one piece that I wonder, along with number 10, Magma Drama, if the tone was getting too young sounding. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I was worrying more about, is it consistent enough, or do I need, and then you go, do I need to even worry about that? This is musical theater, you know, anything goes, right? Or does it? So so when I started writing pieces like that, I really sort of was trying to think about the character arcs of all the characters, like Tuff, and telling the story and involve, like, keeping the story moving with a side character too, because he's a really, I really love Tuff, because I really relate to him, and so, you know, hiding a condition, and but being stood up for by Stoney, and Stoney is this, we portray him as a big tough guy, but he's actually a pacifist.
Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting too, not stereotyping the characters. I also like was really interested in strong female characters who control their destiny. And I feel like, again, I was trying to write material that could be dug into by students.
By anyone.
Or by anyone, but in particular, because at the time I was thinking about like workshops, and so Jewel actually goes to Stoney in the beginning of the second act. And usually in Romeo and Juliet, Romeo goes to Jewel. So I was trying to reverse stuff. And I also, the girls actually start to really question in Just Like Normal. Not Just Like Normal. Which is a song. Anyway, the Jewel and her cohorts, they... Jewel is supposed to be married to Basalt, but she's going, it just doesn't feel right. But they're saying, go along with it, you know, it'll be fine. But she's questioning already. So the whole theme of asking questions, and these girls who are strong, they're hunters. So at the beginning, one of the characters, side character, Pumice, comes in with a rod of mice. She's a hunter, you know, like really cool. And they're very strong. And so... that is another theme that I wanted to reverse character stereotypes and reverse this overall concept that we have of female characters having to be stereotyped in a certain way, and also male characters in a certain way. And in fact, we suggest a, you know, relationship between Felspar and Basalt at the end. There's all sorts of ways it can be played and played with these characters. So,
and I love this, like idea of reversing characters and having like, turning around the stereotypical characters, because one can listen to that through the cast recording, like through the music and through the songs, one can feel that, like you just said, Stoney, is portrayed as this really tough guy, but in the end, it's a pacifist and it's a sweetheart. And he ends up standing up for his friends. Jewel and her cohorts are this really strong female characters, and one can listen to that through the songs.
Yeah, yeah. I'm so glad that's you get all that. I love that. Yeah, so as I, you know, I continued to develop motivically in the summer, and I was really just had a sketch pad of, like, I go to the piano and I write motifs down. Then I brought my guitar, and I'm not really a guitar player, but I studied guitar as a kid, and classical guitar, and I actually started getting blisters on my fingers as the song goes. I started incorporating a lot of guitar. And I felt like it sort of, the tone started to feel right to me. Mm-hmm. So guitar, bass, and I have a sort of progressive rock background too. So I started thinking, well, I shouldn't really be afraid to, like, you know, delve into like stuff that, you know, resonates with me and might resonate with these characters. I started actually thinking, oh, I'm going to keep all the instruments natural. They're going to all be like, there's going to be no electronics. You know, it's going to be real pure, like natural, you know, everything with skins and nylon strings and everything, you know. But that ended pretty quickly when I added trombones, electric guitars. And then it's like, oh, okay, look at this palette of, you know, it transcends time, you know, it's the Stone Ages, but, you know, we're talking about a story that should transcend sort of trying to be a purist. Mm-hmm. And
it's a universal story, so it works with electronic instruments. Yeah, it just works.
Yeah, and I've been in the studio with, you know, other shows like Scrooge where I've had the whole orchestra in front of me. Mm-hmm. But this is in the pandemic, this was totally different.
Yeah.
And I just treated it like a pop record. So it started up pretty simple with me having tracks I'd used in the workshop that was part of this whole development process. And I took those tracks and I started, they were kind of my basis. There were a lot of MIDI drums, which I replaced with live drums. There was a bunch of bass, which I got, you know, bassist to, you know, cover all. So I had one and a half day session in New York pre-pandemic with the drummer and bassist. And we laid down a ton of tracks.
I wanted to ask you actually about the cast recording you did. You all did this through or during the pandemic, right?
It actually started slightly before the pandemic in mm-hmm. February of 2020 with Antonio Cipriano was actually the first in the studio, and he actually recorded in three different places because after the pandemic he was near Tennessee, he was in North Carolina, so he drove up to Tennessee, he recorded some more there, and then he ended up in LA mm-hmm. and he recorded more there too. So I answer your question. Yeah, like recording started in New York pre-pandemic. I had a rehearsal with Christina pre-pandemic, but then the pandemic hit, everyone scattered. Yeah. And then we did a remote recording much later in July of all her stuff. Telly, he came over to my apartment. I was in Harlem then in actually December of 2019. We had a rehearsal and I think he was the first. We recorded at Douglas Studio with him in Brooklyn, and he laid down his songs in January, late January of, yeah, so he was the first actually. So a few singers pre-pandemic, and then it was just like, boom, and when it hit, it was like, everyone left the city. It was like so crazy. I mean, it was like Exodus from New York. It was so crazy. I remember the day, like, it was like when Lisa and I said, well, you know, we better just, you know, New York shutting down, basically. Let's go back up to Burlington. And I remember like that subway ride to, no one was on the subway. Mm-hmm. It was like crazy. And then the Uber driver I got was like coughing away. I was going, should I be worried? So I cracked open the window and then I rented a car. I'm digressing here, but pre-pandemic recordings, and then ended up the rest virtually. And it was actually very cool because honestly there's really not a heck of a lot of difference when you can talk to it's like you and me now. Mm-hmm. I can talk to you, so if you're singing a phrase and it's like, no, can you like be a little more like sad and heartfelt in that? And, you know,
yeah.
And it's boom. It's right. It's like I'm in the other room. So with recording, I feel, you know, there wasn't really, you know, doing it in a pop way where you're layering stuff, it really doesn't affect too much. And it's actually, you know, it's kind of cool in a way because Well, I think for the composers and producers, because they can kind of, you know, be really hyper-focused in their, not have to like spend an hour in traffic getting all frustrated and blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. Mm-hmm. They're hyper-focused on the material. Yeah. And so I think for me, I feel like one hangover from the COVID thing is that I'll probably still do a bunch of virtual sessions because I'm on track to do Scrooge next. And I'll do some live, but I feel like I could do a lot of it, you know, virtually. And that means the palette of artists too, because, mm-hmm. you know, wherever they are, they, you know, no one has to, you know, spend 2 days to get wherever they're going.
So. I wanted to ask you, now that the cast recording is out and everyone can listen to it on streaming platforms, where is the musical headed next? Do you want to look for the funds and produce it? Do you want to do try to do an out-of-town run or an off-Broadway run? Where do you want to go with this musical?
Yeah, I mean, one of the prime reasons for doing the, you know, creating a cast recording was to have it in a permanent place. Not that the show is fixed. Mm-hmm. I think every show changes once they get into production stage. Yeah. But having it in a fixed place with clear story, like in the digital liner, you get a pretty clear sense of the story if you download the album.
Yeah. And
you'll get the digital liner. I'm not plugging that by any means. But that I think for producers, their time is limited. They're looking at a lot of stuff to be able to go easily to a place where they can listen to the music and say, hey, this is cool. I'd like to get involved. So sure, I am totally, you know, I feel like, number one, I would love colleges and high schools. I'd like to get this to licensing because I think it'd be super fun. It has a really universal message.
Yeah,
I think it has educational value with the message. And I think vocally it could be very interesting for the kids because there's a lot of different material. Choral material. There's challenging, some mm-hmm. challenging tenor stuff too, as you maybe heard in like some of the pieces Antonio sang, which, you know, can be really great for. So I think educationally, I'd love to see it out there. And I think, you know, the whole Broadway, off-Broadway touring, again, I think it would do well. I think it would be loved by a lot of people, but you don't know. And I do, I think, so I am, you know, I'm open to developing it. So yeah, your producers in Colombia, hit me up. but I have been producing tours myself as, you know, and I feel like at this stage where I'm at now, I am wanting to back away. So I am looking for a lead producer for the show. Someone who can shepherd it through the channels of financing and off Broadway or tryouts or more development. So that's in my mind because I feel like, and I think a lot of creative artists feel like this way, is that it's difficult to balance the business and creative. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great to have someone just taking care of those elements, and it lets frees one to be more creative and to do the changes that need to be made or to pursue other creative avenues to keep healthy creatively. So that's where I'm at with that with Stonecrossed. So and I feel like, you know, a lot of I always have been approached and by singers like, where can I listen to your stuff, where can I sing the music, how can, you know, sheet music. And so I feel like it's the start for me of sort of documenting the stuff so it can be in a place people can find. I want to have the sheet music online so they can find that and enjoy the material and mm-hmm. hopefully useful for them too. So, yeah.
Well, Philip, I love this. My last question for you is, if someone wants to contact you, what is the best way to get a hold of you?
I think nystage@gmail.com. That's nystage@gmail.com. That's a great way. You can also go to pdstern.com. That's the website. And I think you can look up stonecrossmusical.com too to get Stonecross stuff, and you can go to Broadway Records also to actually get the album and iTunes and all those other platforms. So,
So listeners, now you know, if you want to work or you want to sing something that Philip has created, go to his website and check out Stonecrossed on their Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and please do yourself a favor and listen to that amazing cast recording. Philip, this has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for coming over.
Thank you, Martin. I so appreciate it.
I know that it will be great, and I cannot wait to see where Stonecrossed goes.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of Backstage Talk. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Backstage Talk Podcast.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.